Right. Welcome in, everyone, to another deep dive. You know how we do things around here? We pick a topic or a case or whatever, and we just go deep, figure out what's interesting, what's important. Today we're looking at a New Jersey case, Hart v. Hand.
Hart v. Hand, a family law case,
You
right?
know it. And a pretty interesting one. I mean, it's got a lot in there that's relevant for law students, you know? Child support, multiple families, how the courts figure that all out.
Multiple families. Oh, so we're talking about a parent who has kids with different partners. Always makes things more complicated.
You got it, exactly. And then you throw in expert testimony and how that all works, you know, the evidence rules. It gets pretty nuanced. Plus, there's always something to learn about how to actually litigate these kinds of cases, you know, the practical stuff.
Yeah, that practical side is often what gets missed in law school. You can know the law inside and out, but if you don't know how to apply it in the real world.
Doesn't do you much good.
Right.
Right. So look, we've got a ton of stuff on this. Case court decisions, analyses, even some internal guidance we use to, you know, make sure we're hitting the important points. Really, our goal today is to sort of distill everything down, give you the stuff that matters without getting bogged down in all the legalese.
Sounds good. So where do we start? What's the background on this Hart v. Hand case? Who are these people?
Well, let's start with our main character, the hand in Hart v. Hand. That would be David Richard Hand. He's got, get this, three kids. Three different relationships.
Okay, so right off the bat, we see the multiple families thing coming into play.
Exactly. So he lives with his oldest son and his current wife. And there's another son, a bit younger, who lives with his mom, TB. And the youngest, a daughter, lives with Mr. Hand's ex-wife, Susan Marie Hart. So that's the setup, right?
Three kids, three moms. All right, got it. What happened next? What sparked this whole legal battle?
So back in 2003, Mr. Hand has this pretty bad injury. Yeah, it's serious stuff. But a few years later, in 2007, he gets a $1.2 million settlement. Now, at this point, he's already paying support for his son with TB, and he's still married to Susan Marie Hart.
Right, the mom of his youngest. Okay, so big settlement, $1.2 million. You'd think child support would be all set.
You'd think, right? But that's not necessarily how it works. You see, the court agreed to impute an annual income of $57,200 to Mr. Hand for the purpose of calculating child support.
Hold on, hold on. Back up a second. Why impute income at all? He got this huge settlement. Why not just use that?
That's a great question, and it gets to the heart of how child support is determined. A settlement, even a big one, is a one-time thing, right? It's a chunk of money. But child support is ongoing. It's based on a parent's ability to earn money over time, their earning capacity. So the settlement might give him a cushion, but it doesn't mean he automatically has a steady income stream forever.
So they're looking at his potential to earn not just his current assets. Okay, I'm following.
Right. And that imputed income, that $57,200, that's the court saying, look, even if you're not working a traditional job right now, we think you're capable of earning this much.
Got it. So what happens next? Does Mr. Han just accept that number and start making those payments?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. Fast forward to 2011. Mr. Hand files a motion with the court asking them to reduce his child support payments. He's saying basically that he can't earn that $57,200 anymore.
I see. So now it's a question of whether his circumstances have changed enough to justify a reduction in support.
Exactly. Now, the trial court, they initially deny his request. They're not buying it.
So, case closed.
Not quite. They give him a little guidance, though. They tell him, look, if you want to prove you can't earn that much, you're going to need some evidence. Get a report from a vocational expert.
A vocational expert, someone who can assess his skills and job prospects given his limitations from the injury.
That's right. Somebody give an objective opinion about his earning capacity. So, Mr. Hand, he's not giving up. He appeals the trial court's decision. And just to make things a bit more complicated, he also appeals a separate order where he had to pay $600 in attorney's fees to Susan Marie Hart.
$600 seems like a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of this
Kate, you're
case.
telling me. But it's a good reminder, right? Even in what seems like a small issue, the costs can add up. Something for all you future lawyers to think about.
Absolutely. Costs are always a factor.
Yep.
So what happens with these appeals?
Well, the appellate division decides to hear them both together. And here's where things get really interesting. The appellate division finds that the trial court made a mistake. They didn't properly consider Mr. Hand's obligation to all of his kids when they did the initial child support calculation.
Ah, okay. So this is where the multiple families issue becomes really important.
Exactly. And to understand what the appellate division did, we got to look at the New Jersey Child Support Guidelines, specifically sections 12A through 12C.
I'm guessing those sections deal with how you calculate support when there are multiple families involved.
You got it. They talk about things like the other dependent deduction and prior support orders. Basically, the court has to take into account any support that's already being paid for other kids. They can't just pretend those other kids don't exist.
Makes sense. You don't want to create a situation where one child ends up with significantly less support just because their parent had other children later.
Exactly. It's about fairness across the board.
Yeah.
And the appellate division, they actually suggest a way to handle these situations. They call it the modified birthday rule, but it's really more of an averaging method.
An averaging method. How does that work?
So let's say you've got a parent who makes, $100,000 a year, and they have kids in two different families. The court would do a couple of hypothetical calculations. First, they'd figure out the support as if the kid in the first family was born first. Then they'd do another calculation pretending the kids in the second family came first.
Okay, so they're running the numbers both ways, considering each set of kids as if they were the first ones.
Exactly. And then they average the two support amounts. That way, the court can make sure the support is fair to all the kids, regardless of when they were born.
So it's not just about the order of the support orders, but the overall financial picture for all the kids involved.
You got it. The court even said, and I'm quoting here, a later born child should not be penalized by reducing the obligor's available income by the prior child support obligation.
That's pretty clear. They want to level the playing field as much as possible.
For sure. Now, let's switch gears a bit and talk about that vocational expert report Mr. Han submitted. This is where we get into some pretty important evidence stuff, especially for you law students out there.
Yes. The net opinion doctrine. That's a big one.
Tell me about it. So can you break down what this net opinion rule is, you know, in plain English?
Sure. The net opinion rule basically says that an expert can't just throw out an opinion without backing it up. They have to explain their reasoning, how they got to that conclusion, and it all has to be based on facts, not just, well, I think this.
Right. It can't be a guess or speculation. There needs to be a solid foundation.
Exactly. As they say, the opinion must be more than a mere conclusion. And to put it simply, the net opinion rule is a prohibition against speculative testimony.
Okay, so how did this rule play out with Mr. Han's expert report? Did it hold up?
Not really. The court took one look at it and said, nope, that's a net opinion. You see, the expert basically said Mr. Han wanted to be a short-haul truck driver and that his earning capacity would be about $36,504 per year.
Okay, but what's wrong with that? It seems like a reasonable assessment.
The problem was there wasn't enough there to support that conclusion. The report didn't really analyze Mr. Han's actual abilities. Remember, he had that injury back in 2003. The report didn't look at how that injury might affect his ability to be a truck driver or any other job.
Ah, I see. So saying he wants to be a truck driver doesn't automatically mean he can be a truck driver. And even if he can, that doesn't tell us how much he'd actually make.
Exactly. They didn't connect the dots. They needed to look at medical records, job market data, and all that stuff to come up with a solid number. They didn't do any of that.
So hypothetically, what could the expert have done differently? What would have made this report acceptable to the court?
Well, for starters, they should have actually looked at Mr. Han's medical records, really dug into how that 2003 injury was affecting him. Then they should have evaluated his skills, you know, what could he do, what experience did he have, and all that. And they should have researched the job market, looking for jobs that someone with his skills and limitations could actually get.
So it's about being thorough, really doing your homework as an expert.
Right. It's about showing your work, explaining how you got to your opinion. And this is important not just for family law cases, but for anything where you're using an expert witness. The net opinion rule, it's a fundamental rule of evidence.
So let's bring this all home for our listeners. They're mostly law students, future lawyers. What are the key takeaways they should be thinking about?
I think there are a few big things. First, if you're dealing with child support and multiple families, you got to know the New Jersey child support guidelines cold. Those sections on the other dependent deduction and how to handle previous support orders, those are essential.
Okay, so know the rules of the game when it comes to multi-family support situations. What else?
Second, if you're using expert testimony, make sure those experts know what they're doing. Their reports have to be thorough, well-supported, and they have to be able to explain their reasoning in court. No shortcuts.
Right. Avoid those cookie-cutter expert reports. They won't fly.
Exactly. And one more thing. In these multifamily support cases, it's easy to get caught up in the legal arguments. But remember, there are real kids involved. It's important to keep their best interests in mind.
It's not just about winning for your client. It's about finding a solution that works for everyone, especially the children. And on that note, it's worth mentioning that that $600 attorney's fees award to Ms. Hart, that was all about how the case was handled, not about the actual merits of Mr. Hand's request to reduce his support.
Right, it was more about the conduct of the parties during the litigation. Just another reminder to be mindful of your actions and how they might be perceived by the court.
So to wrap up our deep dive into Hart v. Hand, we've seen how important it is for courts to consider all of a parent's child support obligations, not just those from one family. And we've really drilled down into the net opinion rule and how crucial it is for expert testimony to be credible and admissible in court.
Yeah, the court wants facts and sound reasoning, not just opinions plucked out of thin air.
Right. And the appellate division, they actually sent the case back down to the trial court to recalculate the child support, making sure they considered Mr. Hand's obligations to all three of his children. They even suggested using that averaging method we talked about.
Interesting. So even though they found errors, they gave some guidance on how to fix things.
And the whole case, it really highlights the idea of fairness in the legal system. The court wants to make sure things are equitable, especially when it comes to kids. But it makes you think, doesn't it?
It does. How do we make sure all kids are treated fairly in these situations? It's easy to say, but much harder to put into practice.
It's tough, right? Balancing the needs of multiple families, making sure the focus stays on the children. Lots to think about there.
Definitely. For our law student listeners, I'd say this case is a good starting point. But dig deeper. Look into other New Jersey cases that deal with multifamily support. Maybe read up on those specific sections of the child support guidelines and the rules of evidence we talked about. There's a lot more to explore here.
Great advice. All right, everyone, that's our deep dive on Hart v. Hand. As always, thanks for joining us. We'll catch you on the next one.